Your ATM is safe. Your banks are safe. There's enough cash in the financial system. And there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. Don't you?
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I have been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now. Find somebody to love, don't you?
The arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
The view was a hook. Trusted your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks. Other percent, are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, now I'll send a day. Another new rent, righteous dead in the way. Bigger the bank. Bigger rebel effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, inside the success. Put back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a big tippy net. Made from your savings. And 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialized lessons while we've been the game. First to fall in the straight with swore. Cause you're just a pawn in the fertility industry.
Money talks and pay for the show. Pay for the cloud. Pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Taught the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us a dream that never delivers. While we're hearing fees, including the ticket, siphoning funds from the mouthless bigot, blinding the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingled the risks so nobody knows. The higher we go to a damaged collateral, another excuse for oppressive control. When government captures private play, reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. The bailouts are poor and depleted.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex, and fallible humans live. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked. Until her economies are lost to the X.
What would happen if we take the money out of its systems? Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purpose and power. How do we build a base? Replace the control and defense with the world of free markets.
Do an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step 2.
Move the savings in their system so no one can ever touch it.
Step 3.
Earn, save, spend, trade. All activities move in this way. We learn our own money. Everything changed. We no longer positive to the family.
It's part of our desire, earning our work, earning the time, earning a larger piece of pie, or if you want to verify. Money is data pure on one way. That's your score to politicians. Come on, capturing part of the place, and we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being sensitive. Move up from gambling and saving. Move up from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't got the trust of what they say. So freedom and wealth can be taken away.
So we treat them, punish all the same.
So we can get to the children's game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, it's the game.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. This is episode 76 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I want to say good morning to everybody out there. This is going to be a fantastic show. We have Natalie Brunel joining us this morning, so I'm really excited about that. But I want to give a couple quick shout-outs to everybody listening in the audience. I see we have Solo Satoshi out there. Good morning, Steve Kelly, Hunter, Chivas, Daniel, Powerlifter, Crystal, and of course we have Wade on the Bitcoin Alaska handle, Eomar, Bob Van Kirk, and we have Natalie Brunel that's up on the paddle now. So I want to be the first one to welcome you to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
We are doing fantastic. So I want to just be, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It is an absolute pleasure having you up here. And for anybody who's unfamiliar with Natalie's work, you must be very
new. Did we just lose Coleman?
Can you guys hear me?
I hear you.
I can.
Yep, we got you loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. So, for everyone who doesn't know, Natalie Brunell is the host of the Coin Stories YouTube channel. She has over 500 videos, 170,000 subscribers, and over 15 million views on her YouTube channel alone. I'm sorry, Natalie, I couldn't get your Spotify or other statistics. So I have no idea. I imagine those numbers are a lot higher.
Well, that's very nice of you. Yeah, the YouTube page has been doing well. It's been really, really fun. I'm grateful that people want to check out the show, the video version. And one of my resolutions for the new year is to do more and more in-person interviews. So come check them out.
Yes, definitely. And we'll throw a link up there to make sure everyone knows how to find you and make sure we get you some new followers. But for those who don't really know, Natalie, can you explain how you transitioned from your role as like a traditional journalist into a prominent Bitcoin educator and a host?
Sure. I worked in mainstream news for, gosh, probably more than 10 years, if you include my training and internships. And I fell down the rabbit hole I sort of started in 2017. I was actually someone who noticed that Bitcoin was going up and my friends were talking about it. I was living in Northern California at the time as a reporter. And so to be honest with you, I thought it was like a lottery ticket. I wasn't making enough. I was really struggling and not feeling a lot of hope for the future and being able to achieve my financial dreams. So I started to purchase it from more of that speculative gambling mentality. And then someone gave me the book, The Bitcoin Standard. And I read it and it was a really transformative moment for me. I realized how little I understood about the financial system and that I needed to humble myself and learn more. And I saw Bitcoin as this really powerful solution. And I suddenly became more optimistic about really everything in the world. And so I started to study it. I pitched stories. I wanted to do stories about Bitcoin, but as you could probably imagine, that they were rejected for the most part. I did maybe a handful of stories over the next couple of years, and I started a podcast just as a hobby because I couldn't really express my passion for Bitcoin in my main job, 9 to 5. So I did it in my off hours before work, after work. I was just on Bitcoin Twitter, learning as much as I can, reading all the books, watching other shows. And then I started Coin Stories just for fun to learn more. I wanted to understand the backgrounds of the people who were prominent voices in the space and where they came from, how they achieved success in their various industries and why they had such conviction in Bitcoin. And then it started to grow and I left my news job in 2021. I can't believe it, to focus on the show and Bitcoin education full time.
I didn't know that you got in, so early. I thought it was in the later cycle that you'd come in. So it's interesting to know that you'd started in 17 and just started going down the rabbit hole.
Yes. I bought my first, you know, fraction of a Bitcoin when it was 4,000 something. And I rode it all the way up to 20, watched it crash, never sold. So I'm very proud. I've not sold Bitcoin.
That's awesome. That's great for the conviction. And normally, unless you get really deep in there and you really understand, a lot of people just panic and they sell it and then you regret it as you continue through the journey.
I just regret not buying more. Like I said, back then when I was a news reporter, I come from a background where my parents are immigrants and they always said, you have to save up. You have to save up for a rainy day. But I was really uneducated about investing. So I saved in cash. I saved in literally the worst savings vehicle possible. And I wish that I had understood Bitcoin back in 2017 when it was a lot cheaper because I would have taken all of my savings and put it into Bitcoin. But obviously we all have our journeys and it took me a couple of years to get there.
Don't feel too bad. Around that same time frame, I bought gold instead of Bitcoin. So, you know, we all make mistakes.
Yes, nobody's perfect. And that's just part of the story, right? You go back and you laugh at yourself. And if you could build a time machine, you just want to go back and slap yourself for not going all in when you first found out. So you would have hit two major milestones then, Natalie. So you would have been, you came in before it hit 10,000. So that would have been a big milestone once it breached that. And then we all just witnessed the other big milestone, the 100K. So did you do anything to celebrate or is it just business as usual?
To be honest with you, I was actually working late. I have two really big deadlines coming up. And so I've been working super late and all of a sudden Sam turned to me and goes, Bitcoin's at 100. And I was like, what? And so all of a sudden, of course, I run onto Twitter. I'm checking the price and I mean, we all knew it was coming, but I don't know. I think once it hit it, it was kind of a moment of disbelief at the same time, because, that bear market felt really long. And even now, even though it's 100,000, I don't know, there's something different than the last bull run. I feel like the masses have not come in yet. I don't know if anyone else feels that way. I feel like we still have a ways to go and people are still skeptical and they think this thing's all of a sudden, I don't know, going to burst and go back down to 20,000. I've had literally people say to me, I'm going to buy when it pulls back to 40 or 30. I'm like, okay, good luck. But no, it was a surreal moment. Very, very exciting.
Natalie, you talk to a lot of people, obviously, and interview a lot of people. Why do you think that is, that we still have people out there thinking that it's going to go back down so far?
I think it's a couple things. I think that the FTX and the whole crypto blowout with all of the big exchanges damaged the reputation of the space. I think a lot of people in the mainstream world just lost faith that this was a legitimate investment. So I think that there's still a ways to go in terms of educating people. I think that a lot of people are going to make the same mistakes this round, where they see Bitcoin is too expensive and so they invest in these meme coins and then those blow up. And so I think that we have a lot of very wary people who just don't understand and haven't taken the time to study Bitcoin. I think the media hasn't helped. And that's the world I come from. And it's so disappointing to me that they approach it from this very negative mentality. It's almost like they're looking for reasons for why it can't work out and why it won't work out, rather than looking at the reasons why it will. And I don't know if that's just instinctive when we approach new technologies. I mean, I certainly was skeptical at the beginning, but I also was curious and I had an open mind and I wanted to learn about it. And I was fascinated by the space and the community of believers. Whereas I feel like sometimes I approach media people and they think it's a Ponzi scheme. They think it's a bubble. They think it's absolutely ridiculous that anyone would put significant amounts of money into it. So I think we have a long way to go with that as well. And then I also think, like, the pandemic, right? The last bull run, we had everyone sitting at home and they were getting stimmy checks and they were sitting online and had a bunch of time to actually look into Bitcoin and get involved in the crypto run. And now people are back at their jobs and they're just focused on other things. I think that people are no longer, they're no longer able to be distracted by what's happening in the space like they were during the pandemic, because they're back in their post, COVID lives.
So then what do you think that the catalyst is going to be to get everybody like, oh, okay, this time really is different? Is it going to be Trump if he does create a strategic Bitcoin reserve, or is it going to be a price?
I definitely think if the U.S. establishes a U.S. strategic Bitcoin reserve, that would be, a bonanza for sure. I mean, I think the masses would be like, oh my God, I have to have Bitcoin. I think the price maybe as well. But again, every time the price runs up, I speak with my peers who are not in Bitcoin, and they see it as the higher it goes, the more out of reach it is. And oh, what about these other tokens? I don't know how many times in the last couple of weeks I've had people, friends of mine who know I'm super passionate about Bitcoin only, come to me and say, hey, what do you think about this token? What do you think about this token? I've heard, oh, this AI16Z token, oh, XL, whatever. And I'm like, I'm Bitcoin only. I think it's too risky. You know, you make your own decision. Everyone has to learn, but I would not do anything long term with any of these other tokens. So I don't know. I think it'll be a combination of price, people learning hard lessons in other tokens, and also potentially if the U.S. were to embrace Bitcoin, for sure, I think that would make more people take it seriously.
So you kind of touched on the unit bias, right? Because these other tokens are so much cheaper. How important do you think it is that we consider, or we make a push with the exchanges to start pricing Bitcoin as sats instead of whole Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to do there, because you're absolutely right. If people started to think of Bitcoin as Satoshis, they wouldn't see it as expensive as they look at Bitcoin's price. But to make that type of a dramatic change, I mean, the media doesn't even fully understand Bitcoin. Why don't you try to teach them about Satoshis? Because when I say sats or Satoshis around non-Bitcoiners, they have no idea what I'm talking about for the most part. They see it as a completely other blockchain or token. So I think we just have a ways to go. But it would be great if the exchanges, let's say, set a precedent and all of a sudden you logged on and regardless of which platform you chose, all of a sudden you saw sats, Bitcoin sats, and you saw this massive balance because it's so much different than fractions of a Bitcoin. But I don't see anyone really pushing for that, and so I don't have hope that we're going to move in that direction very soon.
Jordan, I think I saw you had your hand up, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say I was hanging out with Shane and a local buddy of mine who's a veteran but not a Bitcoiner, although he's now Bitcoin curious. When while the price hit 100K, and we were telling him, I was like, man, if I lost everything right now, if I lost all my coins for some reason, I would, it's not like I would give up. I would still buy Bitcoin.
I don't hear anyone anymore. Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Jordan's still here. Can you hear me, Natalie?
I can hear you.
Okay. Hey, Jordan, you might have to hop off and hop back on. Sorry about that. Hey, Yomar, do you want to ask your question, sir?
Yeah, thanks. So we mentioned, the United States and their strategic Bitcoin reserve. One of the things that, has been pretty high on my radar is, like BRICS, and especially with Putin's recent comments regarding Bitcoin. I'd be really curious to hear, like, if you have any thoughts on that. And how do you think that will, impact everybody's perception of Bitcoin?
I think that, like most people, I have more questions than answers. I think we have a really interesting geopolitical situation. Obviously, the United States has harmed itself, not only by taking on so much debt, but also weaponizing the dollar, especially over the last few years, which really incentivizes countries to find alternatives and create networks like BRICS. But I think the question comes back to trust, right? I mean, Bitcoin is this trustless network, and it is the most powerful computing network in the entire world. And so what alternative can we move to from the dollar that everyone can actually trust? I don't think it's going to be another currency. I think in the long run, the asset that makes the most sense because it is neutral is Bitcoin. But I also think I don't believe the theories and forecasts that the dollar is going to go away in the next five. I mean, I hear some people thinking that the US dollar is going to disappear in the next 5 years. I just don't see it like that. I think that the dollar is way too entrenched in the global financial system. And if anything, I think a lot of currencies will collapse into the dollar. I think stable coins will continue to proliferate. And the U.S. definitely has a strategic agenda since they've been providing so much demand for U.S. treasuries. So I think that the dollar actually still has a pretty long runway. But obviously, people have seen that central banks are starting to accumulate more gold. I don't think we were going to go to a gold standard. I do think eventually more and more nations will adopt Bitcoin. But the next few years, decade, it's going to be full of a lot of tectonic shifts because, as you mentioned, Putin obviously has done some homework on Bitcoin, right? His last comments were, nobody can stop it, nobody can ban it. But we haven't seen something dramatic like some Bitcoiners have predicted where all of a sudden Putin's going to price oil in Bitcoin. So we haven't shifted there. They've been accumulating a lot of gold. And I recommend people listen to the work of analysts like Luke Groman and Preston Pish who talk about the fact that America's biggest problem is we are just printing these paper promises and we are not one of the net producers of the world. We owe a bunch of money to other countries and to ourselves. And these other countries are the ones that are production powerhouses, and that matters, and it's going to start to matter more and more. So if anyone has listened to my recent interview with Luke Groman, he proposed this very interesting hypothesis about how Trump potentially sees Bitcoin as the new oil, that we essentially backed the dollar with oil back in the 1970s through strategic moves involving Henry Kissinger and other bureaucrats, and now potentially could we be moving to Bitcoin backing the dollar, and that creates a whole set of challenges and questions too. So I don't know, like most people, I'm an observer, I'm watching, I'm very curious, and I'm bringing people on my show to analyze all of this. But I do think that the next couple of years will be full of changes, and I try to be positive about it because I do think that Bitcoin is the most empowering tool that we have, whether you're an individual or a company or even a nation state.
Natalie, what do you think about Luke's idea that he proposes on your coin stories about basically using Bitcoin to drive stablecoin demand to drive treasury purchases by entities like Tether? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I zoom out and I think about the fact that we are $36 trillion in debt, and then that does not include the nearly, what, $200 trillion of unfunded liabilities, which is more than all of our production. I mean, we will never pay back that debt. I think Jeff Booth does a phenomenal job educating everyone on how toxic that debt is. And so what do they need to do? They need to print. They need to print money. The best thing that the United States could possibly do is accumulate a finite scarce asset that appreciates in value if we have any chance of paying off at least some of our debt. So I know that it was kind of played as a joke when Trump did that interview and he said, maybe we'll pay off our debt with our little crypto credit card. But I don't see a path to us getting out of our incredible amount of debt unless we somehow have just a productivity miracle. If we're able to somehow supercharge our ability to compete in the industrial world, again, which we haven't for a long time, or if we suddenly, you know, definancialize some of our economy and return the power to people that are actually working and doing productive things, I don't see how we get out of this without something like Bitcoin. So, I don't know the path, and I think that it will be ripe with friction because obviously, the United States has the incentive to want the dollar to remain very, very strong, and Bitcoin, it doesn't threaten the dollar. It's the best store of value. And I think more people use it as a store of value than a currency, but I think they're going to want to, make sure that people, if they're going to spend it, you know, the government's going to know everything about those expenditures. They're going to want to tax it as much as possible. So I don't know what that future looks like. And I'm definitely curious for what my guests think. And that's why partially I do the show on these types of topics.
So do you think that there is a higher chance than 50% that this strategic Bitcoin reserve gets approved? Again, nobody knows for sure, but just what are your thoughts on that? Do you really think it has legs, or is it just inside our Twitterverse because we're all Bitcoiners?
I do think it has legs. I think that the U.S. will have a strategic Bitcoin reserve, if not under President Trump, under another president. I don't know how long this is going to take, but yes, I think that they're discussing it because it's the best asset. It's the best asset. It's neutral. It's the one that's going to go up in value the fastest. So yes, I think that it's not going to be easy. I think everything in Washington DC moves extremely slowly. I think there, a lot of Washington politics is a bureaucratic mess. I don't know what's around the corner with regards to challenges to that, but I don't necessarily see the Bitcoin Act passing with smooth sailing and all of a sudden Bitcoin, the United States is buying their million Bitcoin. I think the most realistic expectation, at least how I see it, is that the United States is going to, hodl the 200,000 it already has, and that will be the start of the Bitcoin stockpile, and then we'll see what they can put forth in terms of actions on buying Bitcoin. But I don't know. I mean, it could happen, but I think things move more slowly than we would like them to.
Well, thank you for that. Infra, before we jump to you, just really quick, as I know we only have Natalie for about another 10 minutes, I just want to just mention Bitcoin Alaska taking place July 5th and 6th in Juneau. If you've never been to Alaska, it is gorgeous. Alaska in the summer is amazing. So make sure you go out there. This is a family-friendly Bitcoin conference. Bring your wife, bring your kids, bring your husbands. It is going to be amazing. This will probably be the only conference where when you purchase a whale pass, you will most likely see whales because we'll be doing a private cruise up Tracy Arm Fjord. And so we'll be able to see whales, sea lions, eagles, everything. I'm going up to that glacier. So you're not going to want to miss this. It'll be July 5th and 6th. Click up on the link in the nest, bitcoinalaska.org. And that was kind of like a shameless plug, Natalie, to try and see if you'd be interested in maybe going up there.
Well, Alaska is certainly on my list. I will definitely explore that opportunity for sure. It's somewhere I really want to go. I love Bitcoin conferences. I have to be honest, I've been to so many Bitcoin events and traveled so much in the last few years. I'm trying to slow it down a little bit, but that doesn't mean I'm going to stop.
So just to add on to that plug, Natalie, thank you for doing that meetup here early last year, the remote meetup. And yeah, we'll be sure to get you on that, you and Sam both, if you're willing to come up on that 8-hour cruise. That's going to take place on July 3rd. So yeah, if you want to see Alaska, this is the way to do it. And a lot of this conference isn't just going to be regular conference events. It's going to be a lot of satellite events that are specific to Alaska.
Infra, go ahead, sir.
Hey, good morning. Big fan of both of you guys. Natalie, I had a question. Just given all the conversations you've had, you touched on it earlier that the dollar for decades there's been this entire complex created where we run these increasingly large trade deficits, hollow out our industrial base, hollow out our middle class, all in exchange for debt, where our biggest export is now our debt. That money then gets reinvested into our capital markets, right? And this is why we see the wealth divide get worse. The dollar continues higher, even though we're running this larger trade deficit. So J.D. Vance clearly understands all this, but like I'm really conflicted about whether or not Trump and the administration really has the guts to truly change that system and to truly confront Triffin's dilemma, which I think is the biggest issue of our time. On the one hand, I can see he kind of wants to, and in order to truly do MAGA, they need to weaken the dollar substantially. So kind of, you know, but then on the other hand, he talks about at the Chicago Economic Forum, right, the reserve currency must be defended at all costs. So how do you see that playing out?
Infra, you might have to rephrase and just shorten your question. I think Natalie dropped off there for a bit. So I think she missed the bulk. I think she missed the bulk of it.
Sorry, I had a technical issue.
No worries.
I heard just the last part about weakening the dollar.
Yeah, in order to truly, you know, accomplish his agenda of reshoring and reindustrializing and fixing the trade deficit, it's going to need a much, much weaker dollar. But then, you know, on the other hand, he talks about the reserve currency status as being the end all be all that must be defended at all costs. You know, people like J.D. Vance clearly understand Triffin's dilemma and Dutch disease, but how do you see Trump, understanding it or not?
Oh gosh, some of this is above my pay grade. But this is where I see so many contradictions. And I think that if you haven't read Broken Money by Lynn Alden, I highly recommend it because she has this beautiful chapter, all about the world reserve currency, and she titles it heavy as the head who wears the crown. And that's really true because on the one hand, it's given us so much power and privilege, but it has also resulted in us financializing our entire economy and really impoverishing the middle class. And so now it's like, how do you reverse that? And I think that that's going to be a massive challenge. And Trump is talking about things like tariffs. And it's just, I feel like sometimes these politicians are throwing spaghetti on a wall and seeing what sticks. And it's like the crux, the core of the issue is the fact that our money has been so corrupted and we have gone so far over the cliff with all of this debt. And now our entire economy depends on the financialization that we've created. It depends on the tax receipts from these ballooning equities and things like real estate. And so how do we change that? I mean, California is almost like a microcosm of this. 10% of tax receipts came from like 4 tech companies that they have there. And yet they're almost doing everything to push these companies out because of their draconian policies. I was one of the people that left. So I think that this is going to be the greatest challenge. We've just become this bloated mess of a government that's too large, that invades too many people's lives and just keeps printing money to sustain itself like a parasite. And I think that this is why people are waking up and becoming so passionate about Bitcoin, because it's the one thing that they can't print. And it's the one thing that provides us hope that we can return some sanity to the system, but it's going to be messy. And I think that the only reason we still have such an advantage is because, again, the dollar is so entrenched. 80% of transactions around the world are in dollars. Most debt is denominated in dollars. So there will be a continual demand for dollars. I don't see, a deflationary bust happening anytime soon, because even if it starts to go in that direction, they're going to print and paper it over. But I think slowly but surely we need to move into this alternate parallel system of peace and virtue and abundance, which is Bitcoin. But I don't have any, expectations that this is going to be an easy couple of years and all the politicians are just going to move in that direction. I think it's going to be very challenging. And I don't know how much Trump actually understands about Bitcoin.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out here pretty quick at how much he understands, and hopefully it's more than kind of what he did with his own token. But I know we're getting timed out, Natalie, so I want to be very respectful of your time.
I have a couple more minutes if you want.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question, Coleman?
Definitely, Bob. Go for
it. Awesome. So, Natalie, I think it would be unfair of us to not ask you for your price prediction this cycle.
My price prediction for this cycle, gosh, it ranges. I think that if we just keep going and the U.S. does not do something crazy like a strategic Bitcoin reserve, I think we will go to somewhere between 150 to 200,000. I guess that's a little bit more bearish. But if we have some massive announcement from whether it's the U.S. government or massive companies or maybe another nation state, then I think it could go really wild and go to 500,000. But I don't know. I mean, I try to be like the Zen master Jeff Booth and not think about it in price. I don't always succeed, but I think it's going up. I'm pretty sure it's going up.
Thanks for playing the game and indulging us.
Yeah, I think I saw something from Schwab. They said if we do an SBR, it could go from like 500 to a million or something.
Yes. Okay. I shared that on my timeline. Everyone should watch that, because the last 10 minutes, I think, were the best quote. That's what I put in my tweet. They basically said that if you don't have at least 10% of your money in Bitcoin, you're going to be significantly behind. And that's what I think is going to be so crazy, is right now people are coming out of the woodwork, right? Bitcoin hit 100,000. Oh, wait, what is this again? How do I buy it? What about these other tokens? As it starts its climb higher and higher, people are going to realize, oh no, I don't have enough. And that's when I think that more and more people are going to pile in, even just to get a fraction of a Bitcoin. I mean, think about how hard it is for the average person to accumulate one Bitcoin now. It's not easy. Even for people that are wealthy. I mean, I know wealthy people here, and I've been trying to talk to them about Bitcoin, and they've got millions and millions of dollars, but the idea of taking 100,000 just to buy one is still a little bit, it doesn't feel right to them. And I bet that those people in a couple of years are going to be like, oh my God, I'll spend $2 million and maybe I'll get 2 Bitcoin. But it's just crazy. And I think the next couple of years will be one of the most intense cycles that we've seen.
Well, I'm thankful to them for not buying yet, because it gives my humble DCA a chance to catch me up. So.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I remember when Bitcoin crashed, everyone thought it was going to 100,000 in 2021, right? I called the top, I think, with a dinner with my girlfriends, and that tweet went viral because took him out, told him about Bitcoin, and then bam, all of a sudden it started its descent. But had we not gone down to 16,000 and spent so long, I know a lot of people, and this includes me, we wouldn't have been able to accumulate as much Bitcoin as we have, because we had this opportunity. I mean, I'm actually so grateful for the crypto winter, because if it had gone to 100,000 in 2021, yeah, that's great, but we would all be, accumulating way, way less, way smaller fractions of Bitcoin. And I think a lot of people are going to feel like they missed out, but we're all still early. So, tell your friends, tell your newcomer friends, no, they're not too late.
Yeah, that's, and I think that's a big message to stress, because everybody thinks that they're late. Even, you know, Natalie, you came in 2017. I'm sure you felt like you were late when you look at the previous cycles and the previous prices. So just again, and just make sure everyone understands you're never too late. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the Moscow time is. You can always, as long as they're accepting dollars for Bitcoin, you're never too late. And so that's one thing to stress. And I do have a question for you, Natalie. If you still have some more time. You seem yep. so bubbly. You're always so positive. Even during the bear market when the price was just tanking, you're still positive. Talking to people that have met you at conferences, they say the same thing. They say that you're you all the way through. You're always positive. How do you do that? How do you stay positive with all this?
Well, I feel. How do I answer this? Number one, I'm very close with my mom. And if some of you have followed my show, I talk about my family's journey. And I have to credit my mom, because I've never seen someone work so, so, so hard with so many odds stacked against her, especially after my family lost everything in the great financial crisis. And when I tell you my mom is the most positive human being in the world, I've never heard her say anything negative. And even when I try to get down on myself, or I feel stressed out, or I feel like something's a challenge that I can't overcome, when I talk to her about it, she is so uplifting. And she just says, you know, be grateful, because there's so much to be grateful for. And I think gratitude is one of the highest forms of prayer. And she reminds me of all the wonderful things. And there are so many people out there, no matter what challenges are before us, there's always someone who has it so much worse and who would do anything to be in our boat. And so I see Bitcoin as this incredible gift, this wonderful invention that came at an inflection point where we needed it most in society. And because we understand it and we're so early, we have a duty and a responsibility to share that with others, to share it with as many people as possible, because this is one of the only things that I think genuinely is, it will lift all boats. And I don't know, I'm excited. I feel grateful that I learned about it, that I get to do this, and I got to leave this secure, stable job and become my own boss and do something I'm so passionate about. Cause you know, when you're working in corporate America, like I was in the news industry, you don't get to call the shots. And sometimes you're doing things that you don't necessarily fully believe in, and you don't feel like you have a sense of purpose. And now I do, I feel like I'm filled with purpose. And when people are positive and happy, they want to make other people happy and find their purpose. So it's a law of attraction. Like it fuels itself. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I just feel grateful.
No, it's always exciting to hear people that are their own boss. How does it feel to be Sam's boss?
I'm not Sam's boss. We have a partnership, and I'm actually really excited for him about all the things that he's doing. I think he's going to have some announcements in the coming weeks or months. So everyone watch out for that. I really admire him too, because, we both have our skills, and I think it's like this with anyone that you work with or a lot of people in the industry. I came up and my background and my skill set, I think, is communication. So I'm able to take a message and break it down and make it understandable for a very, very general audience. Whereas Sam's mind is so in the depths of analysis that, I mean, it's things that I can't even fully wrap my head around. So I'm super impressed. And I think combining our skills, which we do for the news block, has been beautiful, because I know what will work for a general audience, and I know where to break it down and simplify it, and where something is a little bit too complex. But then he helps me get so deep to really understand something so that I can explain it simply much better, if that makes sense. So we play off of each other's strengths, and we help each other with our weaknesses as well.
Yeah, I was totally joking, but I think it's great. Congratulations to you both. I think you guys are a power couple in the space, and yeah, excited to see what you both are able to accomplish.
Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you.
What are you looking forward to in the next 12 months? And it's going to take place in Bitcoin, like something that you can't wait to see happen.
There's a lot of things. I mean, professionally, I have a lot of projects I'm working on. I've been writing a book. So I have nothing to announce yet, but I've been working on it for a very long time, and I'm trying to convey the message of Bitcoin and the problem that it solves very, very simply, and do it in a way that maybe hasn't been done before, which is very challenging. As you know, there are a lot of Bitcoin books out there. I'm trying to encourage all my friends, my peer group, the women that I'm close with to get into Bitcoin, and it's very challenging. That's one of the things where even when I look at my audience now, I have a higher percentage of women than other shows, but it's definitely not 50-50. So I think it's a massive opportunity. I think there are a lot of women out there who need this message and need to be empowered with Bitcoin, and they're just not there yet. So obviously some of you might know I do Women of Bitcoin events, so I'd like to grow that initiative and effort. On the personal front, I hope that Bitcoin helps me achieve my dream of having a home. Ever since I was little, I've never lived in a single family home. I've only lived in apartments, and for a little bit, for 4 years, a townhouse. So I've literally, I know that this sounds weird, but I would like to live in a place that's not connected to neighbors above me, below me, next to me. I'd like to have some land for my dog to run around. And that's a dream that I have that I hope Bitcoin will help me with. But Sam won't allow me to sell my Bitcoin yet for it. So I guess we're going to have to wait and maybe borrow against the Bitcoin, because I'm not allowed to sell yet.
Well, I do think those... Oh, go ahead, Yomar.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say, it's funny you mentioned like the struggle of women in Bitcoin, because I've been trying to get my wife to show any interest in anything financial, including Bitcoin, and I have thus far failed. But I finally made some inroads because I got her listening to Matthew Lysak's Fiat Food, because food and health is something that does interest her. So I'm hoping that will help me bridge the gap from, the stuff she cares more about to, Bitcoin. And, so that's my approach angle so far. I've been trying for several years now, and this is the most progress I've made.
I know, it's tough. It's tough. It's really interesting because I have lived for so many years now on Twitter, on Bitcoin Twitter. It's one of the first things I check. It's this community that has given me so much, and I'm so grateful to be in it. But most of my girlfriends, most of my friends are not on Twitter at all. They're on Instagram and TikTok and these other platforms. And so I've been trying to expand my show to that arena, but it's difficult to get the attention of them on these types of topics. And I don't know why, because some of my girlfriends are actually making more than their partners. They've climbed in their careers, and they're doing really well financially, and they should be investing or paying more attention to how they're investing. And they're just not. They're much more interested in content that has to do with food, health, lifestyle, cooking, fashion, which I do too. I like all that stuff too. I don't know how to combine it with Bitcoin, but that's going to be something that I'm working toward as well. I there's this huge audience of people, of women, that we need to reach, and I will crack the code. I swear I will figure it out, because my girlfriends do not listen to my show, unfortunately, and that's the problem. So we got to get them into Bitcoin.
Please do, and I will be the first one to buy your book for my wife and hand it to her so she'll read it. So,
well, thank you.
I think a lot, though, of that has to do, Natalie, with everyone's individual experiences, right? Because your background is going to be different from a lot of your friends, and so you found Bitcoin almost like a necessity because you saw what happens. And I think that's a problem, especially here in America, is we're very privileged. And so we don't really need it yet. And it's unfortunate, because this is when you should be acquiring it, because when you do need it, it might be out of reach for a lot of people. So I think that's the bridge a lot of us have a hard time with.
Well, I agree with you, because one of my closest female friends, she's in the space, Carla, as you guys might follow her, part of the crypto couple, her and Walker. Carla and I think one of the reasons we became so close is because we have pretty much the same background. Her family also came from communism in Eastern Europe, in Romania. And so we were raised with the same mentality, this like healthy skepticism toward institutions and the government and media and like money, the situation back home where our families come from. It's like, yes, there was a defining pain point, and that allowed us to be more open to Bitcoin. Whereas a lot of my, my friends here who grew up here, the 90s was like the milk and honey era, you know, everyone was in the middle class. All my girlfriends lived in beautiful homes. Their moms didn't have to work. Like, it was so different from my family. My family struggled so much. And so while it was on the one hand inspiring to see that, because I was like, oh, I want that someday. Like that means you're financially secure and successful is if you can have the lifestyle that some of my friends did. But I think if you're in that, it also sort of blinds you because you don't have a reason to peer behind the curtain and say, well, how does our financial system work? And many of them, even though their parents were very successful in say the 80s and 90s, they've had a tough time catching up, and being able to afford what their parents could in that generation. So it's like they do have the pain point, but for some reason they're not realizing it. And I'm not sure why.
I think everyone's life experiences again just kind of makes them who they are. And that's the reason why they just don't see it yet. And I know for myself, it's so frustrating just because, you know, eventually you're going to hit that road. They're going to start having kids. They're going to start seeing the cost of, you know, a new vehicle, college tuition, and they're going to hit that oh no moment. And it's, again, it's just going to be out of reach. Gabe, you have your hand up, sir.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And you're exactly right. I'm glad we're going into this because different people are going to respond to different voices and they have different situations and histories and backgrounds that brought them to where they are. And it's something that I think a lot of us are beginning to recognize is that, you know, one person can deliver the message to you and it can be completely and totally missed or just fall totally on deaf ears. But when you have the right voice, that is the person that you can relate to where there's a shared commonality, we're finding that those similarities are really effective at paving a way and building a bridge. And I mean, case in point, you know, I've been talking to my wife about Bitcoin for a while, ever since I discovered it. And, you know, she's kind of tolerated it and she's listened and so forth. And it's always playing on YouTube and was watching some stuff last night, just like every night. And, you know, there was one person who's very, you know, he's a very well-known voice in Bitcoin. I'll just put it to you like that. And the video was on, it ended. I was looking around for the next thing. So I put on Thank God for Bitcoin. And my wife was walking through the room and she stopped. She never stops to listen to Bitcoin stuff. And she grabbed a snack and she sat down and she watched the entire thing. And she said she has a very clear way of explaining this in a way that I never got before. And so now she's sharing it with her friends. And this was referring to you, Natalie. And so it made perfect sense. And a lot of it, it's, you know, it's the stuff that I've been saying to her, but just, you know, in caveman language, apparently. Because she finally got it and she understood it. So, you know, personally, I want to thank you for that because now, there was a spark that was lit last night and she's interested and she's curious, whereas before she wasn't. And I think that's extremely important is, planting those seeds of curiosity in people, and different voices are going to do that in different ways. And it's, I think that was a good example of that I felt would be valuable to share. So thanks, Natalie.
Oh, well, thank you. So are you referring to the God Bless Bitcoin documentary?
Yes. Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, yeah. I am so grateful that I was a part of that. All credit goes to Brian and Kelly Estes. They are the filmmakers. They are the visionaries. If you haven't seen the movie, make sure to check it out. It's free. And you're right, Gabe. I mean, it's a great way to share the message with people who are new, because it is such a peaceful, positive portrayal of what Bitcoin is and what the problem is that it solves, and it's through the lens of ethics, ethical money, morality. Like why do we have inflation? Because at the core of it, inflation is theft. It dilutes our money in the same way that a water will dilute wine. And I'm just so grateful that I was a part of that and that I got to narrate it. But all the credit goes to the amazing filmmakers.
Hey, Natalie, are we able to keep you a little bit longer or do you need to start taking off?
Yeah, I have about 10 more minutes.
Okay, perfect. I'm still going to open it up. Does anyone else have any more questions for Natalie before I ask some more? So I got one for you. You've you've done so many videos, and your most popular ones are Douglas McGregor and Whitney Webb. They're just back to back. I think they're your top four. Outside of those, who's your most memorable guest that you've ever interviewed?
Oh gosh, that's really hard. Because the guests are all so unique and different, and I learn so much from all of them. I would still have to say that the guest that whether I interview him or I watch his other interviews, that I learn the most from and that is the most thought provoking is Michael Saylor. I don't know how he does it, but I think that every single new interview, he has some like new soundbite or headline that is so beautifully articulated and constructed in his mind. Like, the last time I watched him on, I think Fox just the other week, he calls it the protocol for prosperity, and it just rolls off, you know, the tongue. It has alliteration. It's beautiful. But every time I talk to him, it's just, I don't know. I've always admired people that just have such deep intelligence and they're able to pick stuff up and retain it. Because for me, I don't know if anyone else feels this way, but sometimes I feel like I don't have a great memory. And so I read something, but it's hard for me to remember and be able to articulate it in the way that I want to. And then I meet people like Michael, and it's like, it's almost as if every single book that he's ever consumed just downloaded so deeply, and he's able to philosophize and bring up context and examples from history that are so specific with specific names and people. And Whitney Webb is sort of like this too. I mean, her brain is like an encyclopedia, and I have such a deep admiration for that because it's a skill that I don't have, and I wish I did, and I try my hardest, but I just think it's amazing when people have that type of intelligence.
Yeah, it's almost too much. With those videos, I have to watch them at least twice to completely comprehend it. Otherwise, it goes right over my head. And even then, I still probably miss the vast majority of it. So.
Oh yeah. Whitney can spit out like 100 names in 20 minutes, and all the shell companies that they're in charge of. I don't know how people do this, from memory, but I will say, you actually touched on something that's really important to me and that I used to try to teach my students when I was a professor at USC. People will forget what you said, but they will not forget how you made them feel. And so if you can capture a feeling through your message, especially if you can do it in a concise way, that's 10 times more powerful than anything, because we forget facts. Witnesses, oh my gosh, if anyone knows anything about crime, witnesses are terrible. That you think you have a good memory, and then you try to share what you just observed, and everyone has 20 different things that they think they saw. So our memories plays tricks on us, but our emotions, if something hits you deep down in your heart and your core and speaks to you, you will remember that for a very long time. And so I think that we all need to find that message with Bitcoin that relates to the people we're talking to, because they will remember what they feel, but they might not remember all the facts and all the technical things that we share with them.
No, and that's perfect. And I think that's one of the biggest messages we need to try and reiterate and just make sure. Cause again, it's so frustrating when you keep telling people that you know that they need this answer, and it's so hard. I find myself struggling with it to stay calm, stay positive, and just be patient. Cause it's frustrating when you know that they need this and they just refuse to dig into it. And so, yeah, I know I definitely need to work on it. It's definitely easier said than done. But definitely it'll make for some good practice to try and implement it. Where do you see Coin Stories going in the next 4 years? Like what's your goal with the show?
I think it's best to have high standards, but low expectations. I never expected this to be my job. I really did it as a passion project. And when I had the opportunity to leave my news job, it was kind of scary. I've shared this before, but I'll never forget. I went to my news director's office, and I told him what I was thinking about, and he thought I was crazy. And he was trying to convince me to stay, and he said that I shouldn't jump out of a plane without a parachute, and to just stay at least another year until I figured things out. And I don't know. I just had something in my gut, and I was willing to take a chance, and I knew that there was risk. And I'm so glad I have never looked back, and I was able to make it work and sustain myself within just a couple of months. So, I think that you know, self-limiting beliefs is something a lot of us battle. And I certainly still, even to this day, have some imposter syndrome. And there are people that, of course, I would love to speak with and have on my show, but there's no way they would answer my DMs right now. So I just need to keep my head down and continue to grow. And I want to be a very neutral and positive source for people to come to Bitcoin. There's always something that we can debate. And I don't think that I have anything to contribute with some of the debates that people discuss, especially today, socially and politically. But I do know that I can talk about Bitcoin, and I can talk about it in a way that makes it something very positive and talks about the future in a positive way. And I think a lot of people need that message. So I'm just going to keep going and be sort of that beating drum. I mean, I know that there are a lot of Bitcoin shows and some people want to venture off into other topics, which I get, but I want to be the Bitcoin show. I want to talk about Bitcoin and relate other subjects to Bitcoin and other topics and news headlines to Bitcoin. So I hope people watch and I hope the show grows, but I don't have any, you know, crazy expectations, cause someone new could come out and be the next big Bitcoin show. And that's great too. And I think that the market should decide.
Natalie, just real quick. Two of my favorite shows to orange pill people. A lot of Bitcoin content doesn't age well. It just gets antiquated, but still two of my favorites are your two of your hard money videos, the Bitcoin Africa and Bitcoin real estate that you did when you were doing the hard money videos. Are you going to continue doing any of those at any point?
I mean, yes and no. So that was like a very obviously unique show, and Hard Money was started by Swan. But I love that type of content. And the genesis was that I really think that we should do more storytelling like that. It's newsy, but it's also evergreen, because you can always go back and watch it even 5-10 months later. And so yes, I would like to do more of that. I have found that people are asking me for more of like the news and the current events. So I've been experimenting with something called the news block on video. But I, you know, my show is constantly evolving as I take in information of what people want. So if there's an opportunity for me to do more of those evergreen stories, I absolutely will. I'm actually working on one right now about Bitcoin mining. It sort of profiles the company Bitdeer, and I basically look at their mining operations spanning not just the heartlands of America, but also Norway and Bhutan. And that's been really fun to work on. I've been writing that script, and I love doing stories like that, because again, hopefully it will be this evergreen piece that people can look at and see how amazing Bitcoin mining is. And it's so different from the public perceptions of it. But yes, I would love to do more stories. That's what I love most, is telling stories.
Satoshi's Bride, you just joined. Do you have a final question that you want to ask Natalie?
Okay. Well, first I want to say thank you, Natalie. I got to tell you that basically whenever anyone asks me about Bitcoin, I just say, do you have time to listen to this woman, Natalie, first? And I send them your link. And I mean, I've sent that a lot, a whole lot. So I really thank you. And then I guess, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm so nervous. Okay, you're beautiful and you're wonderful. And do you want to say anything like to inspire women?
Well, first of all, that is so nice of you. Thank you. I want to be worthy of that praise. So I'm working hard to just have more content that, again, like everyone wants to see, that women will want to see. That was Holly saying hi. Sorry. It might sound cliche, but it's just the truth. I love women. I love hanging out with women. My closest friends, I have a massive friend group of women, and I think that they should uplift each other and straighten each other's crowns. And so I just want more women in the space. I think it would be fun. I think it would be great to Bitcoin. I think that Bitcoin sometimes needs a woman's touch, and hopefully in 10 years, it'll be very equally distributed among women and men.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Just by the way, you don't have to earn any more. You're perfect as you are. And I bet many, many, many people have been orange-pilled by your voice and your words. So you've done a great job, and thanks.
Thank you.
Natalie, I'd love to hear You've inspired me to give it another go in terms of orange pilling my wife. So I would love to hear your recommendation on, is there like a specific episode that you think would be like a good starting point for her, for me to provide to her, or other like you know, potential Bitcoiners that I want to try to you know, set the hook in. Is there one particular episode that you think is like the best or one of the best starting points?
Well, I actually would recommend God Bless Bitcoin, because from beginning to end, it's just such a beautiful story of what is Bitcoin and what's the problem that it solves. And it talks about inflation in a very simple, approachable way. So I would recommend that. But then honestly, I mean, I started my show in 2021, like I mentioned earlier. And at the time when I was doing it as a hobby, the thing that I just really wanted to hear was, who were all the Bitcoiners and why did they believe in Bitcoin? And I'm someone who's always just loved origin stories. Like, where did someone come from? What obstacles did they overcome? How did they grow up? What did they want to be? What jobs did they have? And so if you go back to the treasure trove that is my first like 15 episodes, you literally hear the childhood stories of Michael Saylor, of Preston Pish, of Jeff Booth, of all these big people. We start from the very beginning, like where they grew up and why they believe in Bitcoin. And personally, to me, those are some of the most powerful stories. I'm a little embarrassed when I go back to some of them because I ask very personal questions, which now I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I asked some of these questions. But hey, I mean, I've had nothing to lose and I was very fearless, probably more fearless than I would even be now. So I kind of recommend going to the beginning if you really, cause then it's a very approachable, it's just a story. It's like, who is this person? And then how did they come across Bitcoin and why did they believe in it?
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, we're at the top of the hour, and so I know that you had a hard stop. And so, Natalie, is there anything that you'd like to say or leave us with? And where's the best way that we can support you and your work?
The best way to support is just to watch the show and share it. I would really appreciate that. If you guys could rate it positively, I would be very grateful. That does matter, and it sends it up the charts. So just very grateful for all the support I've had. We recently got into the top 10 for all shows in the United States in the category of business news. So I'm up there with like Wall Street Journal and all these mainstream legacy companies, which is so wild. So I just appreciate it. I'm going to keep working hard and please share your feedback, your guest suggestions. If you ever think I have something wrong and I need to look into it more, just, you know, engage with me and I'm just really grateful. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Natalie, and thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've been looking forward to this. My wife has been listening or looking forward to this as well. So I'm really, really thankful that you joined. And I do hope that you and Sam are able to join us in Juneau for Bitcoin Alaska. It would be a great conference to have you guys speaking.
Thank you so, so much for having me. I hope everyone has a great week and stay bullish.
Absolutely. Stay bullish and stay humble and stay nice. That was, again, something I think Natalie does so naturally. And I think we should all just try and mimic her in that area. But thank you so much. Really quick, I do want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use the code BTCVETS with an S for 5% off. And if you pay in Bitcoin, you get additional 10% off or a potential of 15% off your entire order. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. This is a great space. I was really looking forward to it. In all honesty, I'm a big fan of Natalie. I like listening to her show. There's very few that, I miss, and I try and listen to them all. So I was very happy that she was able to join us. But anybody up here on the panel have any final comments they'd like to, leave us with?
Yeah, Coleman, it's always great to have guests. Obviously, Natalie's a class act, and I guess my big takeaway from today is that there's just so many different people, so many different audiences that we can reach. And so to have people like her that have a voice that somebody will listen to, is invaluable. And so I think we need to get good at curating for the audience of the people that we're talking to about Bitcoin. And certainly Natalie's on that list, but there are others, right? And so I think my big takeaway is maybe somebody won't listen to me, but they will listen to someone like Natalie. So.
Yeah, absolutely. If y'all have recommendations, if y'all want us to put someone special on here, just let us know. Send me a message right there. Send me or just tag me in something and I'll see it. And I'll try my best to try and get them on the space. But absolutely, I love talking to people. I really do. Again, it seems very surreal to be actively in part of this now, sitting on the sideline for so many years. So I absolutely enjoy this. So I'll talk to anybody that's willing to spend their time with us. So again, thank you all for tuning in and listening to this. We do this every weekday, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern. Next Tuesday is going to be an amazing show. We're going to be, of course, it's Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, so we have to talk about MicroStrategy. So this will be a MicroStrategy show on Tuesday. We're going to have DR Lewis, we're going to have Ben Workman, and Adrian Morris joining us, and they will be talking specifically MicroStrategy, kind of the outlook, what their predictions are, and they'll answer any questions we have. So make sure you tune into that. But that's it for me. I do appreciate everybody again tuning in. Go out there, have a fantastic weekend, and let's take a page out of Natalie Brunell's book, and let's just be patient, humble, and just, again, they're not going to remember what you say, but they're going to remember your attitude. So go with a positive attitude and be patient. Try and leave the frustration at home, and let's just point everybody away from these shit coins that are popping up. Let's make sure we show them the distinction between Bitcoin and Hawktua's coin or XRP or Ethereum, all of that shit. So let's make sure we get out there and just have some fun. But that's it. You guys take care and don't shitcoin. It's like baking a cake with expired ingredients.